And this story is not about me, but I'm the only one alive who can tell the story. So my dad was born in Nigeria a long time ago, and in quick succession, his both parents passed. And about the time his parents passed, he was maybe like a young teen, and he had five younger sisters. And my dad was so strong about the power of educating a woman. And so he made sure his five sisters from all the way back in Nigeria will go to college. And one of them ended up going to Harvard Law School. And my dad did all of this and put a ton of strain on himself. And I mean, that takes time. So at the point my dad was able to finally get married and, you know, begin to pop us out, he was 49. And so at the time he had me, he was in his 50s, which is like grandfather age, okay? And so I grew up and I began to resent my dad. And my angst towards him was I felt he had failed. We didn't have the most flashy cars. We didn't have the best of houses. I mean, the man had tried, but I wasn't going to cut him a slack like every teenage boy does his dad. Like, you know what, you're just poor and you're a failure. I'll be better than you. And growing up in that mindset, I really, really, I have a part in our home in Nigeria where I etched into the wall, I hate you. And it was born out of the what I felt was a failure on his part as a man and as a father. And over time, as I began to go through college and I ended up going to med school, my dad's buddy began to bear the consequences of his really tedious youth. And he began to get really sick. And he got hypertensive and he just really began to go really downhill from that point. I remember going to med school, and every time I had to leave for school, my dad lived in the inpatient in the hospital. And I'll go there and see him and tell him, hey, hang in till I get back, and I'll be here when you get back. And over time, my foolish teenage juvenile angst gave way to understanding what this man had been through. Over time, he had developed, thanks to his hypertension, what we know as left ventricular heart failure. And then that kind of packed up his heart, packed up his lungs in succession, and if that wasn't enough, his prostate joined the chorus. And his prostate began to enlarge, and he was just getting down and bad. And if anybody here knows anything about medical sciences, you need to have a decent enough heart and lungs to have general surgery. So we had to wait off on him getting surgery till his heart and lungs were okay to fix his prostate. At the point it was finally okay for his heart to withstand anesthesia in his lungs, I was a doctor. Okay? Yay! But I lived in a different city, so I'll give you guys some context. Let's pretend my dad lived in Maryland and I lived in Georgia. That's how far apart we were. And it's not a place you can easily just run to. So I remember the one night on the 29th of March, I'm sorry about this, the phone rang. He had had surgery. It was a success. I had traveled back from my place of work in Georgia to Maryland to remind the physicians who were going to have the surgery on him, the anesthesiologist, who happened to have been my teacher when I was in med school, to ask him, it's common knowledge, if you're going to ever have a patient have pelvic surgery, the teaching is put him on a blood thinner so he doesn't shoot an embolus, post up and die. And so I go with my little newly minted MD degree. I'm like, hey guys, make sure to put my daddy on a blood thinner. And they were like, get out of here. Like, what do you know? And I'm like, but like, for real, like, blood thinners are like, yeah, we know. And I went back to work. And then surgery takes place. And it was successful. On the 29th of March, 2009, my phone rings. It's 5:30 a.m. I'm about to go in and perform a cesarean section, a CS, on a pregnant mother. And it's my sister who was calling me. Now, the night before, my dad called about 10 p.m. I told him, Daddy, I can talk to you. I'm on call in a very angry voice. If you've ever been on call as a doctor, you're pissed the whole time. So he calls and then I'm like, listen, stop, I'm working, I'll call you back tomorrow morning. And I hung up the phone on him. That was 9 p.m. Saturday night. 5:30 a.m. Sunday morning, my sister calls. Daddy's not breathing. And I'm like, what? What are you saying? This is me gloved up, mask on, you know, the whole works. scrub on, and I'm like, you can't be serious. I spoke to him last night, and my anger just began to escalate. And I'm like, tearing my mask off, I told my surgical chief, I can't do this. I'm going to walk out of here. And I begin to walk down the road to my house, and I'm yelling, and I'm screaming, like, he can't not be breathing. Like, what happened? And she describes that he had gone to use the bathroom at 5:30 a.m., and it was taking a bit too long, so she walked in behind him, and he kind of turned to face her, grabbed his chest, and his eyes flashed white, and he was dead. And I knew what that was. He had shot an embolus. The one that I told them to please make sure they prevent. The cost of this medication will probably be about $1 for about 100 tablets. So it wasn't the money. It was just plain old negligence. And I tell her, put him in an ambulance. I'm screaming, I'm yelling, and drive him to the ER, and let's get this thing sorted out. In my head, I'm like, this has to be a joke. Like, this cannot really be happening. They take my daddy to the ER. They give the phone to the ER doctor, and I just went off on him. And my anger was not that I knew my dad was dead. I told him, have you tried CPR? Have you tried adrenaline? Have you tried to shock him? I knew my dad was dead. I was fighting because I could have talked to him the night before. I didn't do that. I was fighting because this man had lived his whole life trying to help everybody else. And now that his son had come of age and could actually afford to do something nice for him, he's going to die. I'm angry at myself because you traveled all the way to tell this godlike physician, doctor, teachers, professors who are like gods, who you can't speak to, what they should have done. And had they listened to you, your daddy will still be here. But he was dead. I tell my sister, put him in the morgue. And I have to go tell my mother, who lives in a different state, that her husband, who has battled a decade-long illness and somewhat had survived, was down dead. So I do that, and in the end, I travel back to the state where he lived, where he was recuperating from his surgery. And I pulled a few strings to get his medical records. And I was right. They never gave him blood thinners. The cause of death was written as an acute asthma attack. I knew what was a lie. They knew it was a lie. And when I tried to push, to fight, to do something about my daddy passing, I was told, people die. Go bury your dad and move on. Like, don't put your mom through any more hurt and pain. And so we buried my dad with a fake cause of death on his death certificate. My mom thinks he died of asthma, and I need her to keep thinking that. It might be easier for her to believe that. But for me, he didn't. He was killed, point blank. The anger with this story is that ever since then, it's been really hard for me to justify, and this might sound really selfish, but forgive me if I say this, to justify the need to be a clinician if I couldn't save my dad. Why help the next person's dad? I understand it to your dad, it's your dad, but what about my dad? What about the man who suffered for his sisters and then for his family and got nothing in return? At the point my dad passed, and even up until now, the litigation system in Nigeria pretty much sucks. So I could not bring a case against anybody. My dad is 6 feet under. He's gone. He's really gone. In my culture, it's kind of something you do for your parents. You will give them a large chunk, if not all of your first paycheck, to kind of thank them for being there for you growing up. And so, unfortunately for my dad, I resumed work in February. He died in March. And there was a mix-up with my paycheck, so I hadn't given him anything yet. So this was what I did. I took the bulk of my paycheck and made a tombstone for him. Every cent I earned, my first paycheck as a doctor, is my dad's tombstone. And that's my secret. Thank you, guys.